The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Future Proof Radio with host Shane Wolfe. We can definitely change the world if we start with ourselves. In today's show, Shane and his guests will show you how the environment can be improved at home, at work, and in the community, as well as improve your health and save money. Now, here is Shane Wolfe.
Hi, and welcome to Future Proof Radio. Thanks for joining us. My name is Shane Wolfe. Today, we're going to be talking about the Living Building Challenge and Living Future Institute again with my guest, Eric Corey Fried. These are really the ultimate goals regarding sustainability and building standards and really the way that I believe we should be shaping our society and our future. Last week, we spoke a lot about the challenges and the problems that we face in this world. And this week, we're going to speak a lot about solutions. But before that, I want to help you understand kind of the point of the show. And, you know, we talked a bit about this last time. But future-proof really means freedom. It means our freedom to be healthy, to be more sustainable. And really, when you look at where we are in the world, we have a long way to go to get there. And the only way we're going to get there is by working together, educating each other, educating the public. And I came to these ideas because I'm a professional engineer, accredited in LEED and done certified energy auditor work and thermal imaging. And a lot of people don't even know what these things mean. And, you know, I spent 4 years working in this industry and just realized, you know, these things just aren't catching on the way that they should. And they really have to if we're going to start living more sustainably. So for the last couple of years, I've been working as an entrepreneur to help make this happen. And I believe that we can literally future-proof our society through our homes, our buildings, our communities, and our infrastructure if we start by thinking ahead and planning and building these things in. And as it says at the beginning of the show, you know, we got to start with ourselves, and these ideas have to be part of the way we look at the world. So these things are going to take time, and we must be open to new information to make these things happen. So start with ourselves, but for serious sustainability, we need to seriously rethink the way that we do things. We must start with ourselves. We need to explore our ideas of the world and really what is possible. And as I said before, this show is to talk about what's really possible because we can do much better. And that's what the Living Building Challenge is. That's what the Living Future Institute is how do we create a living future? How do we create something which actually gives back to the world rather than continually taking from it? And, you know, you could even say destroying what nature has provided for us for free. So what we currently do versus what we could do, there's a huge gap between there. And a lot of people tend to get hung up on this. And I think it's really preventing us from moving forward as a species and as a society. So let's build a better world. It starts with you. If you want to contact me during the show, you can email me, shane@futureproofradio.com. You can email me at other times too, and we'll try to cover your topic during the show. But you can also phone in during the commercial breaks. They'll give you a number to phone in. And by the way, because Eric and I are both professionals, nothing we talk about in this show is to be taken as professional advice. We don't know your specific situation, and therefore it's you know, we're paid to give professional specific advice for your particular situation. So we can only speak in generalities. And so if this information becomes more prevalent, it will be empowering to you. So take take action, educate yourself, and start making a difference. And, you know, there's serious money to be made in this, jobs, opportunity, and we can do better. So let's start working on that. And welcome, Eric, to the show again. Thank you for joining me.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me again.
Do you want to maybe, last time we talked about, you know, climate change and some of the issues in construction, why we don't seem to be doing things better. You know, we touched on technologies that can change everything. And, you know, we're both on the same page with the rate at which these things are coming online. But I think that the real big thing is, you know, how we talked about this actually at the very end, was how developers typically operate and how we can shift this. Do you want to touch on anything more like that with regards to your role as vice president of the Living Future Institute?
Well, you know, it's funny. I also teach, and right now I'm teaching graduate level students, you know, grad students, and every semester, like we're doing this now because the new semester's starting, and every semester we get to this point, and I want to kind of come up with a name for this, but every semester we come to a point where they're working on their thesis, and they're trying to figure out what they're going to do for their thesis, and they start asking these questions about construction, and they always end up at the same point. They get to a point where they ask me a question, and they go, "Why is it like this?" And unfortunately, my answer is always some version of, "Well, because that's the way we've always done it."
That's funny because it's sorry.
and they're like, they're always waiting for more, you know, they're like, and it's better. Like, no, it's just, that's the way we've always done it. And it's cheaper. No, actually it's not. It used to be, but it's not anymore. It's just, that's the way we've always done it. And so they keep asking the question, and you just, you can see the look on their face when they realize, oh my God, this is not going to be as easy as I thought. Because I think they thought that, oh, with a green building, you've got the better value proposition. Right, because a green building is a healthier building. It generates its own energy, conserves its own water, right? Regenerates its environment. And that's a better value proposition. But as we've seen in capitalist society, the better value proposition isn't always the winning one. In fact, usually it's out of habit. You know, you could argue that McDonald's doesn't make the best cheeseburger. In fact, I would argue that, right? But they sell millions of them. Billions of them sometimes, right? Why? It's not because they have a better value proposition. It's because of other reasons. And sometimes it's just out of habit or location. So, you know, every semester we go through this. And I deal with this on a daily basis. I deal with contractors. And I want them to try new systems they've never done before. And they say silly things like, you know, I hear those solar panels are too expensive. Or I hear that rainwater catchment doesn't work. And then I always say the same thing to them, which is, and it always works, by the way. It's a nice trick. I always say to them, oh, how many solar panels have you installed? Or how many rainwater catchment systems have you installed? Because the answer is always the same. It's always, well, none. So, you know, when I point that out to them, and when they say none, they realize how stupid they sound, criticizing something they don't know anything about. I go, okay, so you don't know what you're talking about then? Is that fair to say? Because I've installed hundreds of them, and I can tell you from experience that if you do it right, it doesn't cost you more. It actually saves you money. So, you know, we're in this kind of absurd reality now where we do things and people are adamant about doing them the same old way, but it's not better. It's actually worse and doesn't make any sense. You know, it made a lot of sense in the 1920s when oil was cheap and abundant and we made everything out of it. But now oil is not cheap or abundant, and we still make everything out of it. And it's you know, we're left in this just kind of bizarre world of, why do we still do that? I don't know, because we always have. And that just seems silly.
You're hammering in on the point of, you know, let's change the way that we look at the situation and the way we look at doing things. Because I can tell you, I've had the very same experience. You know, with I was working with a modular construction company, and the foreman had been working for 30 years, and I showed him some thermal images of my uncle's house, which I just came home from, and, you know, around every single electrical box on the perimeter, you could see how much energy loss was coming from that. And all I had to say was, you know, the person who built this house has been building houses for 30 years. And thinks he's doing it right, you know. there's just certain things that you might not understand or you might not know. It doesn't matter how long you've been doing everything. You and I probably don't even know everything. In fact, I can guarantee you I don't know everything. But it's funny how human beings have that tendency to get stuck in their ways.
Well, I found that people are really driven by three things. One is fear, and it's a big one. And I guess that's normal, you know, a little bit of fear. But when it becomes debilitating or when it prevents you from doing something, that to me is silly. And you know, in a construction project, there's a lot of fear. You know, there's a lot of risk, financial risk, and of course, there's a safety risk too, right? So, you know, proposing something new is technically a risky proposition. So a large part of my job is showing them that it's not new and that it's not risky and that we've really considered a lot of the things that would do things, because, you know, my job is really to mitigate that risk. So when we're talking about sustainability systems for these contractors, you know, I need them to see that it's been done before. And sometimes the easiest thing that I can do is just to get the contractor to talk to another contractor that's already done it. Mm-hmm. And so I can overcome that fear. But the second real thing is this, I guess pride is the best way to put it. You know, I have encountered many, many times on a job site where people will say, you know, my granddaddy built this way, and it's good enough for him, it's good enough for me. And it's like, really? Your granddaddy was probably also grew up in a time of racism and homophobia, and the average lifespan was probably 55, and, you know, people died of polio. I mean, that's not a good argument. That's a dumb argument, really. Mm-hmm. That, you know, just because your granddaddy did it that way, that's kind of silly. He also didn't have computers or the internet. I mean, you know, life is so much better now than it was 80 years ago. So why would you even say that?
Well, and who says that he was doing it right in the first place, you know? Like,
yeah, exactly.
There's just so much more information and opportunity. And yeah, I don't remember the name of the documentary I was watching, but it actually started with that saying is, you know, we tend to do things because we were taught that way, and the people who taught us were taught that way, and the people before them were taught that way. And, you know, until we're ready to recognize that things can be different, and, you know, in terms of where we're going, they definitely should be different, because otherwise we're going to create the same old havoc that we've always created. We have to take a break right now. But when we come back, we'll be talking more about solutions and how the Living Future Institute and better design can contribute to building a better world. So stay with us.
Ask the experts. Call toll-free right now, 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your question. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com. Do you work in the construction industry and provide a service that heals our planet? Do you take pride in helping your customers save money and fight climate change? Does your product save energy or contribute to a healthier and more sustainable building? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then Shane Wolf can help you market your eco-friendly product or service by reaching and educating your potential customers. Our mission at FutureProofMyBuilding.com is to remove the barriers traditionally associated with building above and beyond the code. We want to make it easier for you to provide a more valuable, higher efficiency, more sustainable building with your products and services. As a trusted service provider or product seller of FutureProofMyBuilding.com, you can now reduce your time and effort trying to explain the long-term benefits versus the short-term cost to your customers, and leave that job to us. That way, you can spend your time doing what you do best, building green. Let's build a better world together. Register your business now at futureproofmybuilding.com/register. News. Opinion. Your voice counts. Call toll-free 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787. VoiceAmerica.com. You are listening to Future Proof Radio. To reach Shane Wolf or today's guest, please call in to 1-866-472-5788. Again, that's 1-866-472-5788. Or send an email to shane@futureproofradio.com. Now, back to this week's show.
Hi, and welcome back to Future Proof Radio. Before the break, Eric and I were talking about how the mindset of our world, and particularly in construction, is shifting and needs to shift so that we can start building a better world. And, you know, there's a lot of opportunity in this new world. There's a lot of jobs to be created. I'm looking at an infographic right now that I saw on Twitter a few days ago. At the bottom it says politicomments.com, and this information was from the Political Economy Research Institute at the University of Massachusetts, and I'll just go through it. It says, the truth about job creation: invest $1 million in the following industries, you get this many jobs. For natural gas, you get 5 jobs. For coal, you get 7 jobs. For smart grid, you get 12 jobs. For wind, you get 13 jobs. For solar, you get 14 jobs. For biomass, you get 16 jobs. For building retrofits, you get 17 jobs. And for mass transit / freight rail, you get 22 jobs. So I've seen other statistics like this from another group called Blue Green Canada, which is, it talks about investment in the oil sands, or the tar sands rather. But basically they said that the $1 million invested in that, you produce 2 jobs per $1 million in the tar sands. Meanwhile, if you were to invest in the renewable energy industry, you'd get 13 jobs. And in energy efficiency, you get 15 jobs. So there's going to be difference of opinion according to who does these studies and where they're done and what you're comparing it to. But the bottom line is that there's so many jobs and opportunity to be made by moving our society forward and embracing these new technologies. And last episode, we talked a lot about new technologies. Do you want to talk about that a little bit more, Eric? We can
I've been, you know, it's the end of the year when we're recording this. So, you know, I'm kind of doing my year and look back and then look forward. And so there's a bunch of things that I collected. And I don't know if they amuse anybody else, but they kind of amuse me just because they're so bizarre. So, you know, it started at the beginning of December 2014, where essentially, I read that that the Chinese economy has officially now overtaken the U.S. economy in terms of the size. China is now the largest economy in the world. So it's yet another thing the U.S. is no longer number one in, right? In 1955, we were number one in everything. And since then, it's just been this long, slow decline of things that we thought were number one in. In fact, we still think we're number one in, but we're not. You know, we're 52nd in education in the world, and, you know, 76 in healthcare and all these other things. So now, this is the big one, that the Chinese economy has now overtaken that. And yet, at the same time, this past year, we've had 22 species that officially went extinct in 2014. Wow. And some of them were small things. Like, one was a little snail that lived in Malaysia, right? But it was a concrete company that wiped them out. So it's basically this impact of man is having a very pronounced damaging effect on the planet all in one year. And the American way of life, which everyone is buying into, is clearly not working. And now with China surpassing us, and their goal is to be like us, it's clear that we're headed in the wrong direction. You know, this year also became the hottest year, the new hottest year on record. It also became, oddly enough, a year when, for some reason, the Great Lakes, all 5 of them, froze nearly solid, nearly 90% frozen, which hasn't really happened in a long, long time. So there's all these very troubling, upsetting things going on, which to me is indication that we need to change. And yet, we don't change. We don't want to change. We're very fearful of change. And yet, you know, on a daily basis, on a you know, regular basis, I see everybody using technology that didn't exist 5 years ago. So I know we're capable of great change at a very, you know, quick rate. I just don't know how to you know, get people to embrace changing for climate's sake is the same way that they embrace to change for Facebook, you know, or Angry Birds, or any of the other things that they now do and take for granted that we didn't even have a few years ago.
That's a good question.
I don't have any kind of loose thoughts rattling around in my head. But you mentioned technology, and so I had a client that bought one of those Roombas, you know, the robot vacuum. Have you seen that thing?
Yeah, I've had one.
It looks like a stack of plates or like a frisbee on wheels, right? And it's really clever. While you're not home, it kind of rolls around and vacuums the floor. But my client had called me upset, and it turns out that while they were out, their dog pooped on the floor. And then the Roomba came and then tracked the dog poop all throughout the house.
Oh, my God.
And so there's the tech, you know, it's almost like some bizarre episode of the Jetsons, right, where the technology somehow made it much, much worse, because the dog poop would be bad enough, but to have it like little tiny tire tracks all over your entire house would just be, you know, like a head exploding type of thing. And so he sent me these hilarious photos. They're gross, of course, but they had these photos of tracked dog poop all over his beautiful carpet. So, you know, there's technology is a, you know, it can be a good thing, but sometimes it can backfire.
You're giving a good and compelling case for commissioning.
Yeah, right, or, you know, not using carpet, I guess.
Yeah. I'm not an advocate for carpet, but I'm definitely an advocate for commissioning. So it would make a huge difference if you had it on a you know, hardwood or a laminate or bamboo flooring or what have you. You're still going to have poop, but the cleanup is going to be a lot easier. That's for sure.
Yeah, a little easier. You know, one of the things we talked about earlier today, you and I, was signs for 2015 and why I'm kind of hopeful. And one of them is that the Pope is now coming out in favor of doing something about the climate. You know, he's you know, acknowledging climate change and saying that it's, as stewards of the earth, it's our responsibility to do something about it, which of course is, you know, paradigm shifting. But also I really think it could make a difference. You know, if the Pope can come on board and say that, it could really start to change people's perception about it.
Mm-hmm.
Especially given that in America, you know, one party has decided to politicize this to the point of making it almost a religious issue. You know, that there's kind of a clear divide between those who deny climate change are also kind of falling on a very clear religious belief side too. So him shifting that up is wonderful. And correct, the right thing to do.
Totally. And you think of the influence that an organization like that has on the world. And like you said, we are the stewards of the earth, and we're the creatures that have the most impact. Whether it's good impact or bad impact, it's still up to us to make that impact. And, you know, that's where I see is, you know, what are the goals of what we're doing? If our goals are to, you know, protect the earth and make life better for human beings, then, hey, what's stopping us? You know, it's just a question of choice, and it's a question of putting that effort and setting those goals. Like we talked about, setting goals for 2015, huge. Why doesn't our economy have goals? Why don't we as a society say, hey, we're going to stop climate change, we're going to make human beings healthier and freer and more productive, and, you know, this is completely doable. What's stopping
us?
Exactly.
This is also kind of, this past year has been a kind of a pivotal year, because there's been more talk about the oil and coal companies' influence on government and government policy this year more than ever before, and not just, you know, you've heard a lot about the Koch brothers now, whereas I would think that this time last year, maybe a lot of people hadn't. But not only that, some really staggering numbers, you know, that there are just 90 companies, 90 polluters that are responsible for 2/3 of all the global warming pollution. So all the carbon emissions are coming from just 90 companies. And when I hear it in that context, that actually gives me hope. I mean, yes, it's depressing, but 90 companies, I could call 90 companies. I could get the word out about 90 companies. I could identify 90 companies. I mean, if it was 9,000, that would seem overwhelming. But 90 companies seems like, you could probably incentivize them correctly that they would want to change. But if not, you could easily change the public opinion or the public tide to address those 90 people.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's somewhat apparent that these 90 companies happen to control a lot of money and have a lot of influence in our political system. So yeah. You're right. It's encouraging that it's such a small number, but the level of change that needs to happen is so profound. It's a good thing that it's an isolated 90 companies. And the industries themselves.
Earlier this year, I think it was, I'm blanking on his name now, the guy that wrote Earth, Bill McKibben. I think it was Bill McKibben that wrote in a Rolling Stone article, and I hope I'm not misquoting him, but he had suggested that that the U.S. government essentially could just buy those 90 companies and shut them down. And it would be cheaper. It would actually be cheaper than any other sort of climate change mitigation things that we could do, and have a much bigger impact. And in the article, they even calculated how much it would cost. And
wow.
So suddenly, this idea of that just buying the entire coal industry and shuttering it is not only possible, but it's actually being considered as a somewhat viable option that people, it would be unheard of before. Now, granted, there are it's not a perfect solution because in some ways it sounds like nationalism and I'm sure a lot of people would rise up and scream socialism and all that other stuff. But in a way, it really follows a long tradition of doing what's best for the greater good and protecting the interests of the greater good and the greater public.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the thing is that no one really wants to change, as we said earlier, particularly when you've got all your money on the line. But the bottom line and the reality we were even speaking about last week is that every industry, every business is going to have to change. And the rate of change, because of technology, you're either going to have to change or you're going out of business. And when it comes to preserving life on our planet and making it better, that's kind of a good thing. And, money is a transportable thing. It can be invested in other technologies. It can be invested in other solutions. And we'll talk more about those solutions when we come back.
Ask the experts. Call toll-free right now, 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your question. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Do you work in the construction industry and provide a service that heals our planet? Do you take pride in helping your customers save money and fight climate change? Does your product save energy or contribute to a healthier and more sustainable building? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then Shane Wolf can help you market your eco-friendly product or service by reaching and educating your potential customers. Our mission at FutureProofMyBuilding.com is to remove the barriers traditionally associated with building above and beyond the code. We want to make it easier for you to provide a more valuable, higher efficiency, more sustainable building with your products and services. As a trusted service provider or product seller of FutureProofMyBuilding.com, you can now reduce your time and effort trying to explain the long-term benefits versus the short-term cost to your customers and leave that job to us. That way, you can spend your time doing what you do best, building green. Let's build a better world together. Register your business now at futureproofmybuilding.com/register.
News. Opinion.
Can you hear me?
Your voice counts. Call toll-free 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787. VoiceAmerica.com.
You are listening to Future Proof Radio. To reach Shane Wolf or today's guest, please call in to 1-866-472-5788. Again, that's 1-866-472-5788, or send an email to Shane at futureproofradio.com. Now, back to this week's show.
Hi, and welcome back to Future Proof Radio. I'm here with Eric Corey Fried, and we're talking about the Living Future Institute, and more so the ideas that we need to start embracing to really combat climate change and embrace sustainability and make the world a better place. And before the break, we're talking a bit about, you know, the established corporate structures that we have. And there's a lot of momentum behind these things. There's a lot of money at stake, but there's also a lot of technology coming online. You know, Kodak was once a huge company. I saw a presentation by the director of marketing, the former director of marketing for that company, and he was saying, you know, we had a product where people would actually run back into their houses in a fire to save this product. And now you think this corporation is gone. And the same thing is happening, whether the people in charge of these entities want to agree so or not. There's probably going to be shifting in the way that these things change. But for instance, I'm hoping to have a colleague of mine, his name's James Glennie, on the show in the near future. He's trying to start a wind co-op, and you know, he's running into issues because of connecting to the electric utility. And you know, these are difficult technically with regard to how they're done. But quite often, it's the policies and the mind shift that needs to happen. And we're going to talk a bit more about these policies and these shifts, and you know, buying out these different companies, as Eric was saying before. It's not as easy as we think. But what do you think, Eric?
I thought you were going to say more.
Sorry.
You know, Einstein, I believe it was Einstein that said, you know, we live in generalities, but we think in detail. And I think there's this desire for the answer to be simple and clear, but in truth, it probably isn't. There's another thing I wanted to mention before. So, you know, I work for a nonprofit. And so, you know, one of my jobs is essentially, you know, asking for money, you know, asking for donations. And anytime that the staff has this kind of insurmountable thing, you know, God, that's a lot of money. How are we going to get it? I remind them of one thing, which is that Paris Hilton has sold $2 billion worth of perfume. And so if she can do that, I'm sure we can go raise, you know, 10 grand or whatever it is that we need to find for, you know, for our worthy cause. And so, you know, it's just a matter of putting things in perspective sometimes.
Well, what better cause could there be than you know, perpetuating human life in a healthy and sustainable way, as well as other life as well.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I think those are very meaningful goals, and there's a lot of people who can get behind that, especially if we can make money and opportunity for people all over the world in the process. You know, I think it was Peter Diamandis, I believe I read in one of his emails, he said, you know, if you help a billion people, you should make $1 billion. And it makes a lot of sense that, you know, there's a lot of problems in the world that we can be focusing our attention and our intention on. And, you know, there's just so much opportunity out there.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, one of the things that we do at Living Future Institute is, you know, it's as much a philosophy as you know, as we have a, you know, an educational program. So for instance, we have a program called the Living Building Challenge. And the reason it's called the Living Building Challenge is because it's a challenge. It's hard. And so what it says is that it doesn't ask the question, how can we be less bad? You know, how can we just, you know, not be as toxic? Instead, it asks a very real question, which is, where do we need to be? Where do buildings need to be in order to truly be sustainable and in order to truly have what we call a living future? And so our Living Building Challenge is essentially a rating system, a green building standard, that says that you can't use any known toxins in your building. You have to produce more energy than you consume. You have to reuse your water. And none of these things are optional. You can't pick and choose which points you go after. They're all required in order to meet the challenge. And when it first came out 8 years ago, no, 9 years ago, people said that it was impossible, couldn't be done. And now there's 235 buildings that have registered for this challenge and are doing it. So it's quite remarkable. But it's amazing if you raise the bar high enough and even higher than people think is actually reachable. People will find a way to get there, especially given how clear-cut it was that, you know, we don't really have a choice. This is where we need to be. This is where buildings need to be, given how, you know, damaging buildings are on our planet.
When you think that in the U.S., I think it was 1960, they said we're going to go to the moon by the end of the decade, and it took 9 years, but they went to the moon. You know, that's a huge, huge accomplishment. That's going to the moon. It's not talking about building buildings. Like, it's, we already know how to build buildings, and this is a completely doable challenge. I really like the idea behind it. It's, we can put, do anything we put our minds to.
Exactly. So it's you know, that's why I say it's as much a philosophy as it is a certification, because it's really just a different approach to looking at the environment. I think for the last 30 years, we've been taking this approach that, you know, gosh, let's be better guys. You know, let's not be so bad. And, you know, let's try to use less toxins and more recycled materials instead of stepping back and saying, well, no, why are we knowingly using any toxins at all? That was kind of what happened to me in my own practice as an architect, is that, you know, I'd have conversations with people, you know, and I'd think, why, you know, I already know so much about the chemistry here. I can't in good conscience. I mean, these are friends of mine. These are my clients. I have dinner with them, and I hang out with their kids, and I know them. You know, when you're designing a house for somebody, especially, you get very close to them. And how could I knowingly let them use paints with known cancer-causing chemicals in them? Why? Because it's, you know, a couple dollars cheaper per can. That's just silly. You know, so, you know, I very quickly in my practice kind of hit this wall where I thought, I can't even offer it to them just because it's cheaper. Instead, I just have to set their expectations from the start of, listen, we just know too much, and you're, you know, the budget is the budget. So I'll build you something for the budget, but the goal is not to build it as nasty and cheap and toxic as possible. The goal is really to build you something that's worthy of you and your family.
Totally. Well, what are you looking for? And you know, maybe it's a question of communicating people's priorities clearer to them, the way you did with the toxins. You know, do you want something that's pretty and poisons you, or do you want to be spend a couple bucks more and, you know, not be poisoned? And I think that that's a pretty compelling argument. It's not that difficult a decision, in my opinion, but, you know, we tend to overlook that. And, you know, if you're not working with someone who has that intention in mind, you know, you're probably going to get the cheap thing. And that's unfortunate, but that's the way that our society functions. So with regard to the Living Future Institute, you guys have also the Living Product Challenge, is that the right name for it?
Yeah. So we have a Living Building Challenge. We have a Living Community Challenge, which really looks at kind of master planning. And then we have a new thing called the Living Product Challenge, which actually will be released in April in 2015. And
And really, the idea is how you build living products, products that avoid any known cancer-causing chemicals, that are built with renewable energy and are packaged the right way and have an end of life. And it looks at the entire, what we call, life cycle of the product, you know, from its birth through its use, and ultimately, what do you do with it when you're done with it? And so we're working with these 50 companies now as kind of a test case. And then the idea is to get thousands of companies, of course, on board with it. But, I imagine when they first see this in April, when it's released, companies are going to say, oh, that's impossible, can't be done. But we're now used to that because that's what happened with the Living Building Challenge. So with Living Product Challenge, it's a high bar, but it's a high bar by design. It has to be. And it'll also get us to where we need to be. You know, the beautiful thing about now having 235 buildings around the world that are going through this challenge is they're all models for other people. They all stand as kind of a testament for other people. It's not, we didn't think that there would be, the kind of thing that every building would do right away. But what we did know is that as each one got completed, that suddenly now there's this real world example that people can copy and imitate. And what we've seen with these buildings is that everywhere there's a living building, you're usually seeing some sort of precedent setting. Usually that building is the first one to use reclaimed gray water, or it's the first one to use net metering, or it's the first one it's usually a pioneer in some way, each of these buildings. So with the Living Product Challenge, we expect the same thing, and that launches in April, and I'm really excited about it and excited for the world to see it.
Well, that's definitely an awesome undertaking, and the best way to lead is by example. So the corporations and the product makers that actually follow through with this and take part in this, they're setting themselves up for a real advantage, because it's much better to be a leader than it is to follow, especially when you're talking about something that the world needs. So I'm completely behind this, and I think it's a great thing. We have to take a break right now, but when we come back, we'll continue talking about the Living Product Challenge and Living Future Institute. So stay with us.
Talk, talk, talk. That's all we do is talk.
Yeah!
If you'd like to talk, call us toll free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Do you work in the construction industry and provide a service that heals our planet? Do you take pride in helping your customers save money and fight climate change? Does your product save energy or contribute to a healthier and more sustainable building? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then Shane Wolf can help you market your eco-friendly product or service by reaching and educating your potential customers. Our mission at FutureProofMyBuilding.com is to remove the barriers traditionally associated with building above and beyond the code. We want to make it easier for you to provide a more valuable, higher efficiency, more sustainable building with your products and services. As a trusted service provider or product seller of FutureProofMyBuilding.com, you can now reduce your time and effort trying to explain the long-term benefits versus the short-term cost to your customers, and leave that job to us. That way, you can spend your time doing what you do best, building green. Let's build a better world together. Register your business now at futureproofmybuilding.com/register.
Talk, talk, talk. That's all we do is talk.
Yeah!
If you'd like to talk, call us toll-free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com.
You are listening to Future Proof Radio. To reach Shane Wolf or today's guest, please call in to 1-866-472-5788. Again, that's 1-866-472-5788. Or send an email to shane@futureproofradio.com. Now, back to this week's show.
Hi, and welcome back to Future Proof Radio. Before the break, Eric and I were talking about the living product challenge and how different products are coming online now that, you know, they're not toxic, they're for building regenerative systems and, you know, ultimately keeping people healthy. And one analogy that came to my mind just before the break there was, you know, everyone in our society seems to want to be keeping up with the Joneses, but what if the Joneses' job was to be sustainable, to be the bar for sustainability? And that's essentially what we're talking about with the Living Product Challenge, the Living Building Challenge, you know, the Living Future Institute. It's all one and the same. LEED, Future Proof, Passive House. All these people are trying to do stuff to move us forward. And, you know, what we're really talking about with the Institute here is setting the ultimate bar. And so I think that we can ultimately do that, and we should be doing that. Eric and I were kind of joking around about, you know, what would aliens think if they came to Earth and saw what we've done with our home? What do you think about this, Eric?
Oh, so, you know, I'm kind of a sci-fi nerd. So I think about aliens a lot, probably more so than I should. And I realize if aliens were to come here, and like intercept our TV and radio and internet signals, they would conclude weird things about us. You know, they would, first of all, if they got our internet, they would think that cats doing goofy things somehow were our king. You know, they would think that cats rule the earth. And then if they got a hold of our TV signals, they would think that eating weird food or, you know, weird athletic challenges of reality TV is somehow, that's some sort of contest that we require of all of our people. You know, and if they got a load of our food, they would think that we use food as a form of suicide because it's slowly killing us. There are all these weird things that if an outside observer were to come from another planet, they wouldn't understand. And to me, it's a good barometer for kind of thinking about if we're on the right path or not. You know, because if aliens were to come here and attack us, you know, imagine if they did that. Imagine if they attacked us, and in doing so, they blew up our mountains, and they started to boil the oceans, and they started to just kind of make the entire, you know, climate change overnight, and they started just toxifying all the soil, and just to be jerks, they would sneak in genetically modified organisms into the food. You know, how would we react if they were to do that to us? You know, would we summon the might of our military and attack them and fight for our freedom? Or instead, would we kind of, you know, grant personhood and give them tax breaks, you know? And I really don't know, because it seems like aliens don't need to do that to us, because we've already done it all to ourselves. You know, the aliens could just kind of swoop in and just take over overnight, because we've kind of done a lot of the work for them. So, you know, it's to me, it's a good example that we need to change. We need to want to change. We need to realize that just because we've always done things this way is not a good reason to keep on doing them, especially now knowing what we now know, that it doesn't work. It makes us sick. It makes us unhealthy. It's going to run out. It's going to get more and more expensive. And so I'm hoping that this is the year that people not only realize that it's time to change, but that they actually want to.
Well, and, you know, the thing that is really the kicker is that we're doing all of these suicidal things for something that banks make out of thin air. And, you know, it's a great way to measure progress and to keep track of things and to trade value with one another, but it shouldn't be the end goal of what we're doing. We should be saying, you know, let's set the goals of long-term health and prosperity and freedom. And, you know, I couldn't agree with you more in terms of us poisoning ourselves. And I think it's absolutely ridiculous that this would be something that we just do mindlessly. And I think that's a big part of the problem, is that, you know, human beings are conditioned, and you mentioned fear driven. That's just part of our animal past. But once we start waking up and, you know, living more freely, there's no telling what we can do. If we can go to the moon in 9 years in the 1960s, imagine what we could do now with all the technology we have and all the extra information we have. if we were really to put our minds to improving our lives.
Exactly. Earlier this year, Apple had one of their annual stockholder meetings, and someone stood up and they were complaining about all the time and money that Apple's spending on dealing with climate change and looking at environmental toxins, because they've kind of presented their environmental report card for the year. And so this one group of shareholders stood up and said, we represent this big fund and we own a lot of stock and we don't like this. Where's the profit? Where's the payback? Where's the ROI? And Tim Cook, who's the CEO of Apple, as you all know, he said, when we look at our iPhones and we make them easier for blind people to use, we don't think about the ROI. And he said, frankly, when we're looking at, making our phones less harmful to the environment, we're just thinking about the ROI. And if you don't like it, you can sell your stock. Now, this kind of went unnoticed in the press, but it was really legendary, because the way the law is that the shareholders could sue the company. I mean, they have that right. They could actually sue the company saying, you're not acting in our best interest, which is to make profits. Now, nobody has, and I doubt anybody will, but it's kind of amazing for a company to say to a shareholder, screw you, we're doing the best products that we can, and this is what we believe. But any other company would feel this pressure from shareholders, especially from their board, to maximize profits in spite of the environment. And Apple's not doing that. Of course, Apple's being so successful now that they can get away with it. But it's just kind of an interesting take, I thought, that Apple's able to say, screw you, if you don't like it, sell your stock. And I wish more companies would say that, although, probably only Apple's the only one that could actually get away with it.
Well, that's a very good point. You put a big smile on my face talking about that. And you're very right, that the onus is on making profits. But, when you really look at it, if you're doing the right thing, you're going to make more profits than if you're doing the wrong thing, especially in the long term. And unfortunately, that's not the way our society is geared. It's not meant for long-term thinking. We're meant to think in terms of quarters rather than in terms of, what's this going to do in 5 years? Is this building going to be here 10 years from now, 20 years from now, 50 years from now? How much is it going to cost me to run 10 years from now? And like for the average person listening, if you're a homeowner, you might be thinking about your mortgage payment, but if you're building to net zero and your mortgage payment is the same as for a net zero house is the same as it would be for a house that you're paying the utility company, you're paying yourself, So in terms of some of the sustainability things we're talking about here, there actually is a monetary payback. You just need to look for it, and you need to think a little bit longer term. We have to close soon, but I want to thank you, Eric, once again for being my guest. And do you have anything else to add?
We have one final thought, because I like the wording of it. I've been working on this statement. So I'm going to read it to you, and I apologize for reading it, but I haven't memorized it yet. It's something I wrote, which is that left to its own devices, nature prioritizes drivability, survival, and resilience. And to us, it looks random, but it's really strongly shaped by these priorities, drivability, survival, and resilience. In contrast to that, left to its own devices, mankind prioritizes the exact opposite, economy, efficiency, and short-term returns. And to us, it appears like it's focused on the community, but it actually isn't, because it's so strongly shaped by these priorities. And so that's kind of my, it's kind of things like that I write down, and then I try to find ways to counter that, of how we can start acting more like nature and understanding the economies of nature better to apply to man-made economies.
Well, that's a brilliant sentiment, and I look forward to more conversations with you in the future about these things, because they're definitely important topics that we should all be discussing. And if you're listening to this, I encourage you to please share this podcast, share this radio show, and information about the Institute, because there's lots to know. I got 30 seconds left, and I really want to thank you once again, Eric. You know, you can join me on Facebook, futureproofmybuilding.com. There's a free version of my book online. Check out Organic Architect. That's your website, right?
Organicarchitect.com if they want to see more of the slides, and then living-future.org for Living Future Institute.
Excellent. Thanks once again, Eric, and join us next time for Future Proof Radio. Thanks, and have a good one.
Thank you for making Future Proof Radio a part of your week. Please join your host, Shane Wolf, for another edition next Tuesday at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. See you on the next show.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.